coming to town, but he has 364 days to recover from a severe case of exhaustion, which he must have today. This is Christmas Day Monitor. Ho, ho, ho. And I'm Barry Nelson. He, he, he. Who is your host? We have a special Christmas story planned for this hour. Lauren Green's narration of Gift of the Magi. That's 2 minutes from now.
Somebody had to do it. Somebody had to put fresh taste in a filter cigarette. New Chesterfield menthols did it, and we're glad. You might have known that Chesterfield, with its 50 years of tobacco experience, would be the one to do it.
Somebody had to do it. Somebody had to put fresh taste in a filter cigarette. New Chesterfield menthols did it.
This is Barbara Feldon, Secret Agent 99, wishing Monitor listeners everywhere a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
And it's no secret now, 99. So same to you from all of us on the Monitor Beacon. Traditions of Christmas is giving. O. Henry wrote a story about it called The Gift of the Magi. Lauren Green tells it.
$1.87. That was all. And 60 cents of it was in pennies. Pennies saved one and two at a time by bulldozing the grocer and the vegetable man and the butcher until one's cheeks burned with the silent imputation of parsimony that such close dealing implied. Three times, Della counted it. $1.87. And the next day would be Christmas. There was clearly nothing to do but flop down on the shabby little couch and howl. So Della did it. Which instigates the moral reflection that life is made up of sobs, sniffles, and smiles, with sniffles predominating. Now, while the mistress of the home is gradually subsiding from the first stage to the second, take a look at the home. A furnished flat at $8 per week. It didn't exactly beggar description, but it certainly had that word on the lookout for the mendicancy squad. In the vestibule below was a letterbox into which no letter would go, and an electric button from which no mortal finger could coax a ring. Also appertaining thereunto was a card bearing the name Mr. James Dillingham Young. The Dillingham had been flung to the breeze during a former period of prosperity when its possessor was being paid $30 per week. Now, when the income was shrunk to $20, the letters of Dillingham looked blurred, as though they were thinking seriously of contracting to a modest and unassuming D. But whenever Mr. James Dillingham Young came home and reached his flat above, he was called Jim and greatly hugged by Mrs. James Dillingham Young, already introduced to you as Della, which is all very good. Della finished her cry and attended to her cheeks with a powder rag. She stood by the window and looked out dully at a gray cat walking a gray fence in a gray backyard. Tomorrow would be Christmas Day, and she had only $1.87 with which to buy Jim a present. She'd been saving every penny she could for months with this result. $20 a week doesn't go far. Expenses have been greater than she had calculated. They always are. Only $1.87 to buy a present for Jim. Her Jim. Oh, many a happy hour she had spent planning for something nice for him. Something fine and rare and sterling. Something just a little bit near to being worthy of the honor of being owned by Jim. There was a pier glass between the windows of the room. Now, perhaps you have seen a pier glass in an $8 flat. A very thin and very agile person may, by observing his reflection in a rapid sequence of longitudinal strips, obtain a fairly accurate conception of his looks. Della, being slender, had mastered the art. Suddenly, she whirled from the window and stood before the glass. Her eyes were shining brilliantly, but her face had lost its color within 20 seconds. Rapidly, she pulled down her hair and let it fall to its full length. Now, there were two possessions of the James Dillingham Youngs in which they both took a mighty pride. One was Jim's gold watch that had been his father's and his grandfather's. The other was Della's hair. Had the Queen of Sheba lived in the flat across the air shaft, Della would have let her hair hang out the window someday to dry, just to depreciate Her Majesty's jewels and gifts. Had King Solomon been the janitor, with all his treasures piled up in the basement, Jim would have pulled out his watch every time he passed, just to see him pluck at his beard from envy. So now Della's beautiful hair fell about her, rippling and shining like a cascade of brown waters. It reached below her knee and made itself almost a garment for her. And then she did it up again, nervously and quickly. Once she faltered for a moment and stood still, while a tear or two splashed on the worn red carpet. On went her old brown jacket, on went her old brown hat. With a whirl of skirts and with a brilliant sparkle still in her eyes, she fluttered out the door and down the stairs to the street. Where she stopped, the sign read, Madame Sofroni, hair goods of all kinds. One flight up, Della ran and collected herself, panting. Madame, large, too white, chilly, hardly looked the Sofroni. Will you buy my hair? Asked Della.
I buy hair, said Madame. Take your hat off and let's have a sight of the looks of it.
Down rippled the brown cascade.
$20, said Madame,
lifting the mass with a practiced hand. Give it to me quick, said Della.
Oh, and the next 2 hours tripped by on rosy wings. Forget the hashed metaphor. She was ransacking the stores for Jim's present.
She found it at last. It surely had been made for Jim and no one else. There was no other like it in any of the stores, and she had turned all of them inside out. It was a platinum fob chain, simple and chaste in design, properly proclaiming its value by substance alone and not by meretricious ornamentation, as all good things should do. It was even worthy of the watch. As soon as she saw it, she knew that it must be Jim's. It was like him, quietness and value. The description applied to both. $21 they took from her for it, and she hurried home with the 87 cents. With that chain on his watch, Jim might be properly anxious about the time in any company. Grand as the watch was, he sometimes looked at it on the sly on account of the old leather strap that he used in place of a chain. When Della reached home, her intoxication gave way a little to prudence and reason. She got out her curling irons and lighted the gas and went to work repairing the ravages made by generosity added to love, which is always a tremendous task, dear friends, a mammoth task. Within 40 minutes, her head was covered with tiny, close-lying curls that made her look wonderfully like a truant schoolboy. She looked at her reflection in the mirror long, carefully, and critically. "If Jim doesn't kill me," she said to herself, "before he takes a second look at me, he'll say I look like a Coney Island chorus girl. But what could I do? Oh, what could I do with $1.87? At 7 o'clock, the coffee was made and the frying pan was on the back of the stove, hot and ready to cook the chops. Jim was never late. Della doubled the fob chain in her hand and sat on the corner of the table near the door that he always entered. Then she heard his step on the stair way down on the first flight, and she turned white for just a moment. She had a habit of saying little silent prayers about the simplest everyday things, and now she whispered, "Please, God, make him think I'm still pretty." The door opened. He looked thin and very serious. Poor fellow. He was only 22. And to be burdened with a family. He needed a new overcoat, and he was without gloves. Jim's eyes were fixed upon Della, and there was an expression in them that she could not read, and it terrified her. It was not anger, nor surprise, nor disapproval, nor horror, nor any of the sentiments that she'd been prepared for. He simply stared at her fixedly with that peculiar expression on his face. Della wriggled off the table and went for him. "Jim, darling," she cried, "don't look at me that way. I had my hair cut off and sold it because I couldn't have lived through Christmas without giving you a present. It'll grow out again. You won't mind, will you? I just had to do it. My hair grows awfully fast. Say Merry Christmas. Please, Jim. And let's be happy. Oh, you don't know what a nice, what a beautiful, nice gift I've got for you." "You've cut off your hair." Jim looked about the room curiously. "You say your hair is gone," he said, with an air almost of idiocy. "You needn't look for it," said Della. "It's sold, I tell you. Sold and gone, too. It's Christmas Eve. Be good to me, for it went for you. Maybe the hairs on my head were numbered," she went on with a sudden, serious sweetness. "But nobody could ever count my love for you. Shall I put the chops on, Jim?" Out of his trance, Jim seemed quickly to wake. He enfolded his Della. For 10 seconds, let us regard with discreet scrutiny some inconsequential object in the other direction. Then Jim drew a package from his overcoat pocket and threw it upon the table. "Don't make any mistake about me," he said. "I don't think there's anything in the way of a haircut or a shave or a shampoo that could make me like my girl any less. But if you'll unwrap that package, you may see why you had me going a while at first." White fingers and nimble tore at the string and paper, and then an ecstatic scream of joy. And then, alas, a quick feminine change to hysterical tears and wails, necessitating the immediate employment of all the comforting powers of the Lord of the Flat. For there lay the combs. The set of combs, side and back, that Della had worshipped for long in a Broadway window. Beautiful combs, pure tortoiseshell, with jeweled rims, just the shade to wear on the beautiful, vanished hair. They were expensive combs, and her heart had simply craved and yearned over them without the least hope of possession. And now, they were hers. But the tresses that should have adorned the coveted adornments were gone. But she hugged them to her bosom And at length, she was able to look up with dim eyes and a smile and say, "My hair grows so fast, Jim." And then Della leaped up like a little singed cat and cried, "Oh, oh!" Jim had not yet seen his beautiful present. She held it out to him eagerly upon her open palm. The dull, precious metal seemed to flash with the reflection of her bright and ardent spirit. "Oh, Jim, isn't it a dandy? I hunted all over town to find it. You'll have to look at the time 100 times a day now. Give me a watch. I want to see how it looks on it." Instead of obeying, Jim tumbled down on the couch and put his hands under the back of his head and smiled. "Dell," said he, "let's put our Christmas presents away and keep them a while. They're too nice to use just at present. I sold the watch to get the money to buy your combs. And now suppose you put the chops on." The Magi, as you know, were wise men, wonderfully wise men, who brought gifts to the babe in the manger. They invented the art of giving Christmas presents. Being wise, their gifts were no doubt wise ones, possibly bearing the privilege of exchange in case of duplication. And here I have lamely related to you the uneventful chronicle of two foolish children who most unwisely sacrificed for each other the greatest treasures of their house. But in a last word to the wise of these days, let it be said that of all who give gifts, these two were the wisest. Of all who give and receive gifts such as they are wisest. Everywhere they are wisest. They are the Magi.
Lorne Greene and O. Henry's famous story, Gift of the Magi. Roger Williams on monitor. And we're heard all across the country. WSAZ Huntington, West Virginia, serves the tri-state area of West Virginia, Kentucky, and Ohio. I'm your Christmas afternoon monitor host, Barry Nelson, welcoming another word from a friend you just heard.
Hello, this is Lorne Greene. I'd like to take this opportunity of wishing all my monitor friends a very happy holiday season.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Have a front row table for New Year's Eve on the All-Star Parade of Bands on the NBC Radio Network.
There's no place like home for the holidays.
On WNBC, New York. December 25th, 1966, a day to remember. But tomorrow, right now, forget it. The nice thing about Christmas this year is we have Monday to recover from the weekend. Keep in mind, friends, that December 26th is not an official day of celebration, but let me be the first to wish you a happy day after Christmas. I'm Barry Nelson, and I guess Frank Sinatra and Bing Crosby go along with me on that because they wish you the merriest.
We wish you the merriest, the merriest, the merriest, the merriest.
We wish you the merriest, the merriest, the merriest, yes, the merriest. We wish you the merriest, the merriest, the merriest. You'll cheer. We wish you the happiest, the happiest, the happiest, yes, the happiest. We wish you the happiest, the happiest, the happiest, the happiest New Year. May your tree be filled with happiness, happiness and friendliness for all. May your heart be filled with cheerfulness, happiness and cheerfulness for all. We wish you the happiest, the happiest,
the happiest,
happiest, yes, the happiest. We wish you the merriest, the merriest, the merriest. You'll cheer and the happiest.
The happiest,
the happiest,
the happiest.
We wish you the happiest, the happiest, the happiest New Year.
May your dream be filled with happiness,
happiness and friendliness for all.
May your heart be filled with cheerfulness,
with happiness and cheerfulness and friendliness for all. The happiest,
the happiest,
yes, the happiest. We wish you the merriest, the merriest, the merriest. You'll cheer and the happiest, and the merriest, and the merriest New Year.
The merriest New Year.
Now, Monitor Sports. The National Football League has awarded its newest franchise in New Orleans to John Meacham, Jr., 27-year-old son of a Texas multimillionaire. A report from Mel Levitt, station WDSU, New Orleans.
John, you have just about 6 months before practice begins. This is probably the shortest period in NFL history to build a new team. What steps have you taken on this already?
We've gone out, interviewed a few people as far as general manager on down, and thought about a lot of ideas on coaches. Had not contacted any yet, but we have signed a new player personnel director, Vic Schwenk, who used to be with the Los Angeles Rams. And this, to us, is the most important position right now, because this man has to get out, look at players, college players in particular, and be ready for the draft, which will be up in about a month and a half period of time.
What do you think are the most important factors in building a new team, starting from scratch, as you are?
Well, from scratch, really, we have the draft that I mentioned a while ago. We have the player draft, the player pool, more or less, that comes to the 15, well, now the 16 teams, excluding Atlanta, 14, that we'll pick the old players from. I shouldn't say oldest, but they're established players now. But our main objective is to go out, find young, aggressive players, and build a new team on this. They may not show very much the first year, but I'd venture to say the fourth and fifth year, they'll probably be as good as any team in the league right now.
You feel, considering the experience that both Miami in the other league, and Atlanta's had this year, in their first year of expansion, that things look a little better than perhaps they might have last year?
Awfully good. At Atlanta, for example, and you can't take anything away from Miami either, they have worked with what was, the old established players, but they did go out and secure young boys. And these boys have gained great experience this year, because not because that they had beaten someone out of position, it was an idea that they had to play. and they have shown what a young team can do with young players. Mm-hmm. Very good.
John, your family has had interests here in the state of Louisiana for some time now, haven't they?
Oh, no, we've been here since about 1947, and this residence right here since about 1950.
Mm-hmm.
So we feel like we're as close to Louisiana as any other place in the nation.
Well, I started to ask you why you were interested in the New Orleans franchise. That may answer it right there.
Yes, sir, definitely.
One question I did want to bring up, and this has caused a lot of speculation down here locally, and that is concerning the name of the team. There have been a lot of suggestions.
Well, there they have. The paper, about 3 weeks ago, ran a contest, and the name that came out ahead was the Saints. Even before this, the name of the Saints had kind of caught on and been every time the NFL franchise, New Orleans, was mentioned, well, the Saints was mentioned right after it. We haven't reached any final decision yet. We hope to very quickly, and naturally the Saints is probably on the top of the list.
Well, the Saints, of course, has a particular connotation here because of the song, The Saints Go Marching In.
Oh, The Saints Go Marching In. Yes, and we've got Al Hurd as our partner, and he does a pretty good job on that horn playing.
He certainly does. Nobody can beat him. John, anything else you'd like to mention before we check out?
I'd like to wish all the people at NBC Radio a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Well, thank you very much, and the same to you and the New Orleans team in 1967, John Meekum. We've been talking with John Meekum, Jr., the new owner of the newest pro football team here in New Orleans. This is Mel Levitt in New Orleans for Monitor Sports.
And speaking of pro football, NBC Radio and TV will air exclusive coverage of the American Football League championship game on January 1st, followed the next day by the Sugar, Rose, and Orange Bowl games. Saturdays, Sundays, even holidays, all the sports news and features on Monitor. Peggy Lee sings about A Christmas Carousel.
Christmas is a carousel, and round we go. Busy doing, wrapping things for everyone we know. Trim the house and trim the tree and let the spirit show. Sing some carols loud and clear and set the lights aglow. And a Christmas cup. Leave some food for all his reindeer and the Christmas mouse. Leave a little bit of cheese somewhere around the house. Now I think that we're all set, so let's all take a ride. Don't you feel the Christmas joy that makes you glad inside?
This is Nanette Fabry wishing a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to everyone on the Monitor Beacon.
Larry Nelson, taking time here for a reflective moment. It's A Christmas Carol by Christina Rossetti. In the bleak midwinter, frosty winds made moan. Earth stood hard as iron, water like stone. Snow had fallen, snow on snow, in the bleak midwinter long ago. Angels and archangels may have gathered there, cherubim and seraphim thronged the air, but only his mother, in her maiden bliss, worshipped her beloved with a kiss. What can I give him, poor as I am? If I were a shepherd, I would bring a lamb. If I were a wise man, I would do my part. Yet what can I give him?
give my heart.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you. Phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
Unforgettable Nat King Cole and Christmas Song. Christmas in the Midwest, a report on the highlights of holiday activity there now from Monitor reporter Del Donahue in Kansas City.
Christmas Day brought bright skies and brisk below freezing temperatures to this part of the Midwest. There is snow, patches of it in the Kansas City area, to more than 10 inches over the Missouri and Arkansas Ozarks. The snow, which altered some holiday travel plans, undoubtedly made things easier for Santa Claus last night. He made his rounds on schedule, and judging from noisy reactions, children were pleased with what they found under the tree.
Oh, Mommy, say yes! Isn't this nice?
Okay.
Oh, I knew it all the time. What is it? This is the best Christmas I think I ever had.
Yeah, don't you like it, Gary?
Early morning excitement, thousands of families went to church. Those at Rolling Hills Presbyterian in Overland Park, Kansas, were challenged by the Reverend Robert Ralston to open still another gift.
It is the best gift of all, but it hasn't been touched because some have said, we'll open it later. Others have said, it's an old story, we've heard it before. What is this supreme but neglected gift? God so loved the world that he gave his only Son. To all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God.
For many Midwest families, attending church was part of traditional Christmas reunions. But for this area's most notable couple, former President and Mrs. Truman, it's a quiet day in their Independence, Missouri home. This is the first year they've not spent the holiday with their daughter Margaret and her family in New York City. Mrs. Truman said the former president did not feel well enough to make the trip. But as in the past, the former president sent numerous holiday messages. One to a Kansas City, Kansas children's home, read in part, Mrs. Truman joins me in wishing each of you a Merry Christmas, a joyous holiday, and a long, happy, and useful life. A similar greeting, those of us in the Midwest, extend to you. Del Donahue in Kansas City for Monitor.
Christmas all across the country on Monitor today. What about the next holiday? Listen.
Racing with the moon.
And racing up to midnight, New Year's Eve, Vaughn Monroe will help you welcome in 1967. The All-Star Parade of Bands on NBC Radio begins on Monitor Saturday evening with Henry Morgan, and then the celebration continues until the wee hours of the morning, 4 a.m. New York time to be exact. I'm Barry Nelson, telling you that if you like music, you'll love this special New Year's Eve sound. Live pickups will bring you Gene Krupa, Charlie Barnett, the Glenn Miller Orchestra, conducted by Buddy DeFranco, Jonah Jones, the Benny Goodman Sextet, Harry James, Count Basie, Lawrence Welk, and Ray Charles. So, join the party live on NBC New Year's Eve 1967, the All-Star Parade of Bands. Until sunrise, we'll all be
racing with the moon.
As the glad singer said. And you have 6 days to relax before it's time to start trying to keep your 1967 New Year's resolutions. As for me, well, Last year, I resolved never to make any more resolutions, and I don't plan to break that.
Somebody had to do it. Somebody had to put fresh taste in a filter cigarette. New Chesterfield menthols did it, and we're glad. You might have known that Chesterfield, with its 50 years of tobacco experience, would be the one to do it.
Somebody had to do it. Somebody had to put fresh taste in a filter cigarette. New Chesterfield menthols did it.
Two familiar Christmas carols. This is Barry Nelson for Monitor, where one good wish deserves another. You have mine, and here's another.
This is Joseph Cotton, and may I wish all the listeners of Monitor a very, very happy holiday.
The action of the American League Championship football game next Sunday on NBC Radio and Television.